In recent years, we have heard more and more about trauma and its impact on individuals and families. We don't hear a great deal about trauma experienced by healthcare providers. Today we will. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to Mind Talk with Dr. Pamela Brewer. I am pleased to introduce you to today's topic, the influence of psychological trauma in nursing, and to today's guest. We are joined by Dr. Karen Foley, a member of the Academy of Nursing and author of 5 books, an associate professor and director of the PhD program at Purdue University School of Nursing. And today we are discussing a book that she co-authored with John R. Thompson, The Influence of Psychological Trauma in Nursing. Dr. Foley, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start off with what exactly is your definition of psychological trauma?
I really borrow a lot of that definition from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA as we call it, their definition. I think it has a good comprehensive way of approaching it that's very inclusive as to physical, psychological stress, a single event or multiple events or circumstances, but something causing physical or emotional harmful or threatening stimuli that has adverse events and could be long term. They have the 3 E's, the event itself, how we experience it, and the effects. And I use that paradigm as well in the book.
All right. You reference in the book several types of trauma, all of which we can't go into today, but I would like to touch on a few of the types of specific trauma you discuss, particularly as it relates to nursing. Mm-hmm. You talk about vicarious secondary trauma. What does that mean?
That's probably one of the most researched and most commonly described types of trauma in the literature. By that, it's basically as nurses render care in an empathetic fashion and feel, if you will, and experience, if you will, the trauma of the patients and even their peers that surround them, they themselves have what we call that secondary or vicarious trauma and have traumatic stress type of symptoms because of it, which are very similar to the PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms as well. A lot of literature points to the outcomes of this secondary traumatic stress as burnout, compassion fatigue, and those types of things that we really want to avoid if we can.
And you talk about workplace violence trauma. And, you know, I know that we all know that workplace trauma exists, but I don't know that we think about it in a hospital, although hospitals can be very challenging environments. What is workplace violence trauma?
I divide up workplace trauma, and a lot of other folks do, into external and internal components. We know that up to 1 in 4 nurses will have physical workplace violence against them. I just did a study that expanded on my book, and with Dr. Thompson, our findings in the book was expanded by this qualitative study I did in nurse-specific trauma. And oh my goodness, the descriptions from the nurses of the physical assaults that they had endured, including strangulation, kicked, punched, having their scalps stapled together, it was just really an eye-opener for me as someone who is not currently a bedside provider at what nurses go through. The second type of workplace violence, which I think is a very insidious and subtle, but nonetheless is still harmful to psychological well-being in nurses, is what we consider workplace incivility and bullying. And a lot of folks may not be aware of this, but nurses are not so nice to each other. And I think that what I tried to do in the book was to give us an opening of those conversations so that we could start to heal and reframe it as really traumatic occurrences. We see it throughout nurses and in acute care facilities, primary care facilities, and academic nursing. And I don't know if there's an intergenerational component to it. By that I mean, well, nurses eat their young, and we've done that for a long time. And so I don't know if there's this historical trauma thread to it as well or not. But regardless of if you're referring to workplace violence as committed by patients, patients' families, or that insidious internal workplace trauma that sometimes we do to each other and other professions do to us, they're both psychologically harmful.
You know, as you talk about the various kinds of trauma that are in existence, nursing is starting to sound kind of scary.
You know, it's just this wonderful, beautiful profession. I stepped away from the field for about 15 years. We had a child that had some significant developmental delays, and then I did some other work tangential to the healthcare field. But when I came back to it, I really saw this beauty in nursing that I had overlooked before. I think they're full of heroes. And I teach a doctoral level class right now for Doctor of Nursing Practice students. And I am in awe of those people. They are, in my estimation, what I aspire to be in many respects. You know, I have such respect for my students. They are in the front lines. They're wanting to improve health care. They're wanting, you know, many of them are advanced practitioners. And so while the purpose of the book was to open a conversation, for us to be able to refer to these types of traumas in a conversation so that we could take it a step further and really start to problem solve in a way that was novel and innovative.
Tell me about system-induced trauma. What's that?
So that, my husband's a cancer survivor, and I saw what he went through in terms of the side effects to chemotherapy and how that left him when all was clear in Western medicine's eyes and the cancer was in remission. But I saw the ravages of the treatment. I saw what our family had gone through, and I certainly have seen it in the patients I've cared for. Sometimes the treatment itself can be very traumatizing to patients, and then you get into this. And the types of traumas I outline are overlapping. So the nurse who renders care to these folks who are undergoing these system-induced or medically-induced traumatic events to cure their disorders and diseases will also see their suffering, and then their secondary trauma might increase as a result. You also see a lot of medically-induced trauma when you talk about ventilator-assisted patients sometimes and ICU patients where the whole atmosphere and milieu is very strikingly different than other places of hospitalization. So I think we need to increase our appreciation and our sensitivity to what our patients go through, and ergo then what the nurses see the systems doing to the patients that we are trying to help.
One of the last types of trauma that I want to just talk about in this portion of our discussion today is insufficient resource trauma. I'd never thought of it, but as I read it, it occurs to me that many people in many areas in which they are attempting to help and which their jobs require that they provide guidance and help, there are insufficient resources. And I think what you're saying is that it's traumatizing.
Absolutely. I mean, I presented at Kaiser Permanente in November. They invited me out to talk to what they have nursing scholars in their programs, and it was the Illumination Conference. And I felt, well, people came up to me afterwards and they said, "You helped make sense of my career for me." And when I talk, again, it's a new discourse, it's a new conversation, it's a new way of talking about things. And this insufficient resource trauma, there are just reams and reams of studies that have been done that show outcomes for patients are much more favorable when you have good staffing and you have the help you need. Insufficient resource trauma goes farther than that, though. So let's take a new nurse who she's graduated or he's graduated, and they're in orientation, they're in the onboarding process, and they're out on the unit and they don't have the knowledge base to do what they need to do.
Dr. Foley,
that is an insufficient.
Let me interrupt you because we need to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to pick up right here with the new nurses,
sure.
The onboarding process, and then what goes on. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. You are listening to a conversation that I am having with Dr. Karen Foley, who is the co-author with John Thompson of a book titled The Influence of Psychological Trauma in Nursing. We'll be right back. Dr. Foley, just before the break, you were beginning to give us an example, and you were referencing a nurse who was just engaging in the onboarding process. What does that have to do with insufficient resource trauma?
Right. So my definition of insufficient resource trauma goes beyond staffing levels. It goes into a knowledge base. It goes into having access to other professionals. But in the case of the new nurse that is being onboarded, their orientation has to be complete. It has to give them those resources so that when they are on the floor and they're usually eased into it, they usually have a mentor assigned to them. But they need to be able to function at a level that is safe and providing quality care to the patients. That doesn't always happen. And so I think that would be another way of a nurse speaking up and saying, I don't have enough resources to do my job. So often we think about supplies, we think about those tangible resources, but they can also be intangible as well.
You know, I mean, that really does broaden the look, I think, at the idea of resources and the impact of the absence of them. Because I don't think that traditionally we connect the two together and think about the trauma of that experience. Speaking of trauma, tell us about the story of Karen. You introduced her to us earlier on, and she was a nurse who had been raped. Tell us about her.
I don't know if I named her Karen. I'd have to look back, but this was an individual.
I might have changed her name again.
Okay. this is an individual who touched my heart and soul and will forever live within me for her courage and her bravery. And I was also very touched with my peer who teamed up with me to help her. It was a student who came into my office one day and really kind of blurted out, I was raped over the weekend. And it was a process of healing for her. And it was really my first, I mean, I worked as a psych nurse for a while. I worked in long-term care. I worked as a administrator. But this was really the touch point for me. I mean, I think I couldn't have written, I know I couldn't have written this book until this point in my life. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just a touch point for me to say, there's something here that we need to share, and this individual, we use trauma-informed interventions with her to make her feel safe, and that is so important and such an important component of healing from trauma, at least moving forward, is that feeling of psychological safety. And my friend and peer at the time, even small things, we walked her to and from her classes. We made sure she was not alone during that time so she could feel physically and psychologically safe. We gave her a support system when her peers, her other students, had kind of abandoned her. We gave her an endpoint in sight. We, you know, my friend copied out a calendar for her and marked off the days till graduation because this occurred in her very last semester of her plan of study, and so she successfully graduated. And it was that kind of caring, and I think that's why I thought about nurses, and we are still a female-dominated profession. And all that women go through sometimes that is unique. And I just felt compelled to put this all together so that, again, my ultimate goal is people could move forward from traumatic events, have some post-traumatic growth, be a new person and a better person and an alive person and not be defined by what has happened to them.
You point out that nursing continues to be a female-dominated profession, but we also know that more and more men are becoming nurses. Do you see any changes in the profession that you would specifically attribute to the growing number of male nurses that are coming into the field?
I think it's a little too early to say that, but I think the times, they are a-changing. And I think that in the environment we have today, it's more readily apparent than ever. I think men will transform nursing as we know it in a good way. And I want to make sure to point out that I think men are certainly vulnerable to trauma as well. Mm-hmm. I had one of my associates, who is a male in nursing, point out to me when I was talking about this book, he said, well, be sure and put in there about male trauma and being harassed by managers. So I knew immediately that something had happened to him as well. And so I think we have to be very open to everyone's story and everyone's narrative and have those as sacred exchanges where we honor each of our hurt in some way.
I think that's such an important point to make. Because even though I think as a society, and I would like to hear your thoughts, I think as a society we're becoming more open to the realization that men too can be traumatized. I'm not mm-hmm. sure that we're anywhere near the level of sensitivity we need to have. People can mm-hmm. be traumatized.
I would agree. I think we're still operating in some ways under our assumptions of gender and acting within those gender roles. But I think that's another cool thing about nurses. I think we really see people as people. We see them in crises, in their most vulnerable times. And I think that there is such opportunity in those windows of time. I think nurses, as never before, that being said, are under incredible stressors and pressures themselves within the organization. With less time, the electronic health record system kind of, I think, dehumanizing those interactions to a great extent. We talked about insufficient resources. And in my opinion, a real disconnect between those at the point of service and those with the spreadsheets in front of them calculating budget.
Yeah. You talk about the Joint Commission issued Sentinel Event 59. So I've got two questions. What is the Joint Commission, and what is the Sentinel Event 59?
The Joint Commission is accrediting body. They do a lot in acute care. They are a very prestigious organization that sets standards for acute care hospitals and other health facilities. They have certain Sentinel events, which is, if you will, a big deal in terms of hospitals and compliances. And they've issued this Sentinel Event 59 to showcase workplace violence and things that organizations need to do when there are incidents of workplace violence happening. They talk about quality improvement task force. And that's a whole other area in healthcare today. Lean, Six Sigma, and all of these QI projects are being done as a problem-solving methodology in healthcare to improve things. And I have my own opinions about those, but it's certainly tied to this Sentinel event announcement by the Joint Commission.
And what was the bottom line, if there was a bottom line, in this Sentinel event announcement? Event 59.
I think it was to for everybody to sit up, take notice that there had to be some kind of planning done and some kind of action taken when these events were reported. But that in and of itself is the crux of it. They have to be reported. And so a lot of nurses will not report. And I've given kind of an outline of various reasons why those aren't reported. I wasn't really hurt. Nothing's going to be done about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to take time away, referring to the data that I just collected that I mentioned to you. One of the nurses said that she had been part of workplace violence, and she was expected to document everything right away, that she had a timeline for that documentation, and that nobody was really paying attention to the trauma she'd endured. And so that's the worst way you can approach this, obviously, right? Is because it dehumanized her, and it didn't take that that sting away that she really needed to have somebody listen to what she was feeling and what she was experiencing after that event.
So in some cases, some of the reactions are similar to those experienced by victims turned survivors of domestic violence.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that nurses are very strong individuals. I think that they're very stoic sometimes, and I think they're afraid to speak out sometimes too, and do purposeful, healthy things that could make their situations better somehow. But I will say it goes back to that psychological safety and trust in organizations, in nurse managers, in the hierarchy, that their voices will be heard, that change will happen because of what they're reporting. And so I do think, as you've mentioned, the parallels are there. You know, is there trust in the system? Will change be affected? Will somebody believe me? Will somebody know that I'm not the problem if I report it? That I'm not going to be second-guessed as to why I put myself next to the patient instead of having an exit? So all of those things factor into it, and reasons all just let it go.
You talk about, I think you refer to it as duck syndrome. That's kind of a new one on me. Tell us about that.
I ran across that, and I thought it fit some of the students that I see. What we're seeing in nursing academics right now is kind of national reports of really increased anxiety and other mental health issues in our student nurses. And I don't know if it's generational, it might be, but it's something that is bubbled up to the surface. And so I think that there are these expectations on the current generation to pretend that everything is okay when maybe it's not.
Okay.
And that underneath that need to perform, that need to be the best, as a mother of three young adults, the stakes are high for these folks, you know, in a way that it wasn't for me. I think that there's tremendous pressure on young adults right now to perform, and they know the risks out there. And I think that we need to instill in them a hopeful future.
And you know, I think in a lot of ways, what you have written in this most recent book does just that. Dr. Foley, you referenced something called Project Implicit, which I confess I'd not ever heard of. Tell us about this organization and why their work is so important in a conversation about psychological trauma.
So I'm not too familiar with it, but I will certainly share. I think a lot of us have what we call implicit bias. In other words, we're not even aware of the biases that we hold. And so this project is a series of tests that anyone can take online that will give you your ability to kind of be drawn to certain population sections or demographic groups versus others. And it gives us insight into just that, the biases that are unconscious or implicit that we don't even know we have, but this project will bring to light for us, make us more aware as individuals functioning in society, and help us understand maybe our propensity towards one group over another.
It sounds really critical as we look at the, well, I was going to say the whole of the medical profession, but it's actually the whole of our lives. And it is an important thing, I think, for us to all be aware of, and often we're not, for any number of reasons, not conscious, right? I mean, that's one of the issues about implicit bias. Mm-hmm. What do you hope that people will draw from this really wonderful product that you and John Thompson have created?
Well, I remember my very first clinical interaction. She was an older adult in a long-term care facility, and I was a student nurse, all of about 19. And I walked into her room, and I remember feeling totally incapable of caring for her. She was nonverbal. Mm-hmm. It was just a totally different experience than I had expected. I remember my first job, one of my first part-time jobs as an operating room nurse in the evening shift. And it seemed like every time I worked, literally there was a horrific automobile accident or a emergency C-section. And they used to call me the disaster nurse. And I remember all that trauma that I experienced through insufficient resources, insufficient experience and knowledge and personnel. And I just remember my whole career. I could go on and on and on. And what I wanted with this book, what John and I wanted, was to change the dynamics and change the script a little bit for folks so that they didn't have to go through what me and my peers did. They could start their careers with a little bit of a leg up and at least be aware of it, call it what it was, give it a name, have a discourse about it, surround it, be able to identify and not feel alone and perhaps feel more safe and feel more part of a norm, if you will, or a typical reaction, or if they do indeed experience trauma, that they could have some tools to deal with it. Last, I would say nurses are people too, and so that the figure in my book, it's kind of a circle, as you know, but on the left side, there's this humankind trauma. And we're learning more and more about adverse childhood experiences, which is in the media a lot. And we're learning more about ACEs and nurses as well. And I also do work in substance use in nurses. And we've shown that ACEs and scores of ACEs are related to substance use. So I wanted nurses to be seen as not this caricature of a woman in scrubs. I wanted them to be, you know, multi-gender, multi-race people who come to nursing with their own histories and narratives and stories and scripts. And I think the more aware they are of what they bring, the better healthcare provider they will be.
And for those not sure, ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. You know, I don't know if you've thought about this. I just want to put a bug in your ear as we can close out today's conversation. But your book sounds like the basis for a really important, possibly even interdisciplinary, at least course or seminar that people in the health professions would really benefit by, and could actually reduce some of the unanticipated trauma that so many experience.
I would agree, and thank you so much for that. I know physician suicide is being examined, moral injury in medicine and physicians. I know that many of them are very frustrated with the healthcare structure, the lack of control that they have, which is, again, key to feeling safe psychologically. So I think physician suicide is being examined. I mean, there's just myriad. I've spoken to speech and language pathologists and therapists. They feel the same thing. One shared with me how she was the one to disconnect the ventilator. It was just, I think you're exactly right. I think a lot of healthcare professionals have their own traumas. Some may be a little bit different, but I think there's a whole lot of overlap in there as well.
Absolutely. How can people be in touch, find out more about what you're doing and what you're writing about and researching?
Well, I work at Purdue University School of Nursing, the West Lafayette campus, and my email is the initial K as in Karen, F as in Frank, O-L-I, K Foley, @purdue.edu. The book is available through Sigma Theta Tau as well as Amazon. And I am doing continual studies, as I mentioned. I have some work published on substance use. I just submitted an article with the trauma data set, and I continue to do active research in these areas.
Karen, thank you so much for the work that you do and continue to do, and for taking time to speak with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
And folks, I want to thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you regularly and can be heard on several platforms, including iTunes, SoundCloud, Alexa, the Mind Talk app, and the Mind Talk website, which is mindtalk.org. Mind Talk is brought to you as an informational and entertaining conversation. It's not intended to replace any work that you may choose to do with the professional of your choice. If you would like to email me, I'd love to hear from you. That email address is Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, that's exactly what it is. You take care.